Yeah.
This morning we're going to more or less concentrate on the one of the three patriarchs that we don't know as much about. And I'm sure we've all thought about that at some point. We have the three patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But which of those three is the least written about? Isaac. Yeah, he's kind of caught in the middle, isn't he? We study about Abraham, and Isaac fits in there. But then we quickly go off with Jacob, and so Isaac fits in there too. So he kind of gets lost a little bit in the shuffle. He's the man in the middle there. And so we're going to talk about him a little bit. We've already talked about his birth, how long it took for that promise to Abraham to be fulfilled. We have the three promises to Abraham. Let's don't forget those. What were those three promises?
Great nation.
Great nation.
Land.
Seed. Okay. Yeah. Isaac was which one of those three blessings? Right. Nation, seed. Through Isaac was going to come these promises. So he was one of the three, and Abraham waited patiently for him, and he came as a child in old age, and that really made a statement there too, the power of God and the promise to Abraham that this would happen in Abraham's 100th year. He's 100 years old, and Sarah being 90 years old, even in that time, that was unheard of. And a bride is chosen for Isaac. And, of course, Isaac was the chosen one, even though there were other, at least there were other sons. One primary son that came before him was who? Ishmael, yeah, but that was through Hagar, the bondwoman. And, God promises Abraham, no, it's not going to be Ishmael. It's going to be a son through you and Sarah. Turns out to be Isaac. And a wife is chosen for Isaac after Sarah's death. The whole situation there where the steward in Abraham's household that goes off to the land of Haran, to Padan Aram, to bring back a wife for Isaac, how he prays to God and how this wife comes to him just as he had asked of God, and he's able to take the son back to Isaac. And Isaac loved her. And took the place of his mother, Sarah. And I asked Bob Waldron last Sunday afternoon if he had ever heard about, you know, which of the wives of the patriarchs smoked. And he didn't know that. And so in verse 64 of chapter 24, it says, Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel. And some of the versions say she lit off a camel. His answer, he had never heard that. I figured it was an old Florida college joke. I don't know if Sister Buck had heard that one or not. But his guess was, I said, which of the wives of the patriarch smoked? He said, was it Lot's wife? And we come along and Rebecca and Isaac, it takes them a while to have children. In fact, Isaac was 40 when they married, and we find out that it was in verse 20, he was 40. That was 3 years after his mother had died. And it was 20 years later that Rebekah finally conceived. So it took her a while too. In verse 21, Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. And the Lord answered him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Then it goes on to tell us in verse 26 that Isaac was 60 years old when she gave birth. So it took 20 years after the marriage for them to begin their family here. And this was also, God had made that promise to Abraham. It took a while for it to happen. And we had talked about Abraham's death here in the beginning of chapter 25. But actually, it's not going to happen quite yet. That's just the convenient place to put the story of Abraham's death and how Isaac and Ishmael laid him to rest there in the cave of Machpelah with Sarah. And because we actually find out that Abraham, if he would have, says that Abraham died at age 175, and we know that Sarah died at 137 years old, 10 years difference there, and so 10 years difference in their age. And so when we go through and we find out, well, 3 years after Sarah died, Isaac married, and then 20 years later he had the sons born. So if you work that out, that 175 years that Abraham lived, the sons of Isaac and Rebekah would have been 15 years old then. So actually Abraham would have lived to have seen Esau and Jacob. And they would have been 15 years old, approximately, when their grandfather Abraham died. Rebekah conceives, has these, she's going to finally have a baby, but she realizes something was a little different. This is where we left off Wednesday night. The children were struggling within her, verse 22. And she ask the Lord, if it is so, why then am I this way? As Bob mentioned Wednesday evening as we were finishing up, they didn't have sonograms back then. You know, she, you know, something was happening inside her and she couldn't quite explain it. There was a struggle going on inside her, and so she inquired of God, finds out she has twins inside her. The Lord says to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples shall be separated from your body. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. So here, God tells her, you have two inside you. And these are going to be two great nations inside you. And they're struggling inside you now. It's always going to be a struggle for these two. They're always going to struggle. One will be stronger than the other, and the younger is going to be superior over the older. So we begin to see what's going to be happening in the rest of our story here with the sons that come of them, about the younger being over the older and the struggle that would ensue between the two of them and the two nations that are in her womb. And when it came time for her to deliver, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came forth red all over like a hairy garment. And they named him Esau, which means red. But not to be outdone, that other one that was struggling in her womb, he's trying to get out as quickly as he can too. He has his hand on the heel of the firstborn. So out comes the second one holding on to the heel of the firstborn, Esau. He comes out holding on to Esau's heel, and so they named him Jacob, which means to take by the heel, one who takes by the heel, or supplanter. Supplanter means someone that tries to get ahead of somebody else. So you know, the race was on. You know, see who could get out first. Esau was the first to be born, but Jacob was holding on, I don't know, holding him back, or wanting to get out just as quickly. But we're going to see this trait come out, this of supplanter. One who takes by the heel, one who tries to get ahead of the other, one who does get ahead of the other, somebody that supplants. So it tells us again, Isaac, or it tells us here that Isaac was 60 years old when the twins were born. And as some twins are identical, some are fraternal. Sounds more like this might be fraternal, but I'm not going to go there. That's just speculation, but they're very different. Some twins are very much alike, and some are very different. We know these were started out different. One was red and the other wasn't red. So interestingly, red and hairy, that they named him red, named him Esau. And then the second one holding on to the heel, They named, oh, he's a supplanter. We'll name him Jacob. And they're very different as they grow up. Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field. But Jacob was a peaceful man, living in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And we see that even as we go into verse 29, Jacob had cooking ability, cooked stew. A lot of people, you know, try, oh, mama's boy, you know, daddy's boy, and that's true. They did show partiality here. But if you stop and think about it, Jacob is going to be more the one to stay around home and take care of the responsibilities around home, which would include shepherding and other things like that. Whereas Esau liked to go out in the wild and be the hunter and the gatherer, and a little bit different than the job that his father had as a shepherd, although his father admired that in him and enjoyed the things that he would bring back from hunting that game. But that doesn't mean that Isaac liked to stay in the kitchen and cook under mother's heel. It's not quite, you know, that's the reputation he's earned and what we all think about, but think about it in other ways. As we see later in Jacob's life, he was prepared to go out and work with sheep. He knew what to do, and we'll see that as we get in a little bit later about Jacob, and we'll see his skills, not just as a supplanter, which he's very good at, but also his he's blessed by God in his work as a shepherd. But we do see that they're playing favorites here, and we see the danger of that as well. So Jacob was staying at home tending to things. Esau is out being the mighty hunter. And he came in one day and apparently hadn't been a very good hunter that day. He was famished. He was hungry. He must have come home empty-handed. And Jacob had cooked a stew. And Esau comes in and says, oh, please let me have just a swallow of that red stuff there, for I am famished. And so he earned the name Edom as a result of that, which also means red, because he wanted the red stew that was being cooked. Give me stuff, swallow that red stuff there. I'm famished. And Jacob said, before I give this to you, you got to give me your birthright. And you know, being the firstborn, the hand on the heel there, Jacob still wanting to be the first one. You know, sell me your birthright, I'll give you some of this stew. And Esau thought so little of it, he must have thought it just a trivial thing that Jacob was asking for, or either he just didn't have as much care. You can see he was kind of the carefree, went out hunting and gathering while Jacob was tending to things at home. And he said, oh, I'm about to die. What good is that birthright going to do to me anyway? Do you really think Esau was about to die? I know sometimes we get to 1 o'clock in the afternoon and we think we're going to die because we missed lunch at noon. Some of us are so tied to that schedule. And I kind of picture, you know, Esau would have just sat down and been patient for a little while. You know, he would have gotten something to eat there. But or Esau would have been, if he had just been patient for a little while, he wasn't going to die. He wasn't going to go hungry. But he was in such a hurry here. And you kind of see a little bit of the personality of Esau. I think, oh, I'm about to die. What use is that birthright to me anyway? So Jacob says, swear it to me. And so Esau swore to him, I'll give you my birthright in exchange for something to eat. And so he sold his birthright to Jacob. So Jacob gave Esau some bread, threw in some bread too, didn't he? Some bread and the lentil stew. And Esau ate it and he drank and rose and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. He just thought so little of the privilege of being the firstborn and the privileges that go with being the firstborn, that he just gave it all up, even swore to give it to Jacob in exchange for the birthright. And just was so trivial with it, and just had to have that dinner right away, and at what a cost. And so we see right away this relationship between Esau and Jacob, the rivalry between them, some of the feelings between them. And when we start chapter 26, I'm not, as I mentioned earlier, sometimes like when I talked about the death of Abraham, sometimes things are told in a convenient way here, or placed here in a convenient way, I'm not so sure that the first few verses of the events in chapter 26 happened after the birth of Esau and Jacob. This could have occurred during that 20 years after Rebekah and Isaac married, the 20 years before she had a baby. And that's kind of where I put this, but this is a convenient time to tell the story because we set the we put everything here, the setting. There was a famine in the land, and got so bad that Isaac had to head out of there and heads down to the land of the Philistines, to Gerar. And we're introduced to Abimelech, the king. Now, we have a similar story in a little earlier in chapter 20, where Abraham and Sarah went down to the land of Gerar and met Abimelech, the king. And now we're not sure that this is the same Abimelech. There's been quite a few years since Abraham and Sarah had been down in this land. So this could very likely be the son of that first Abimelech. And Melech means king. And Avi, I think it means son of the king, if I'm not mistaken. This Abimelech could have been more or less the title of the king, just like we have Pharaohs and Caesars and Herods and as we read on further in the Bible. So this Abimelech more than likely wasn't the same Abimelech that Abraham and Sarah visited, but it's a very similar story. It makes a special point to tell us here in verse 1, there was a famine in the land besides the previous famine that occurred in the days of Abraham. So it's wanting us to know, yeah, there's some similarities here, but this is an entirely different occasion. So Isaac heads down into that land, and God stops him there, says, don't go down all the way to Egypt. Stay here in this land, which I will tell you. And so Isaac stops there in the land of the Philistines near Gerar, where Abimelech the king lived. And here in verses 3 and 4 and 5, we see the promise that was made to Abraham is also made to Isaac. We really begin to understand the line of the patriarchs here, that it was first Abraham and now Isaac, because God says to him, when he tells him to stay there and not go down to Egypt, he says, sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands. So here we have the land promise. And I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. So he's saying that you're going to have the same, I'm going to have the same promise to you, same covenant with you that I had with your father Abraham. And I will multiply your descendants. So we're going to have a great family here. We're going to have the seed promise, the nation promise. I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven. We've heard that before, haven't we? The stars of heaven and what else? The sands of the seashore, right. And I will give your descendants all these lands. So this is that land promise. And by your descendants, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. So here we have that spiritual promise also. So we have all three of the promises that were made to Abraham are made to Isaac in these two verses here. He's going to give them all these lands. He's going to multiply his descendants and give the descendants these lands. And through those descendants, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. And we understand the significance of all the nations of the earth will be blessed through Isaac's seed, because who comes eventually through the lineage of Isaac? Jesus Christ, right. Through Jesus Christ, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Not just the nation that's being promised here to Isaac, that was promised to Abraham before him. All the nations will be blessed through Isaac's seed, being Jesus Christ. So another of these key passages looking forward to what is to come. We can take this as a great blessing ourselves, even though we're not in this lineage, because through this lineage is going to come our salvation in Jesus Christ. And had Isaac done anything to deserve this? Had he found favor in God's sight? Well, hopefully he had, but it tells us that in verse 5, that this was all going to come to Isaac because Abraham obeyed me and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So this was all coming to Isaac because of the promise that had been made to Abraham. And Abraham had been promised through his seed, and all these things would happen, descendants, nation, and spiritual things. And so Isaac was next in line, and he was inheriting this. So, but of course, I think this also impresses on Isaac the importance, just as Abraham did, that he obey him and keep his charge, the commandments, statutes, and laws, that Isaac be like his father. And all these things were coming because of, as it says here in verse 3, the oath which I swore to your father, Abraham. So all this is passed on to Isaac, and the importance of all of this is stressed to Isaac. So Isaac stayed right there in Gerar, just like God told him to do. And, well, here we see, as I told you, this is going to be a similar story to what we saw in chapter 20 with Abraham. Because when the men of the place asked about his wife, Rebekah, he said, she is my sister. Because he was afraid to say she's my wife, thinking the men of the place might kill him on account of Rebekah, for she is beautiful. This is why I think this happened during those 20 years after they married and before the children came. It would be kind of hard to hide Esau and Jacob, wouldn't it? Especially two struggling young boys. So I kind of think this fits in during that 20 years before the boys are born. Because they would see this Rebekah and she was a beautiful woman, and she could easily be passed off as a single woman to save Isaac's neck. And because he was afraid he might be killed on account of her because she was beautiful. And it came about when he had been there a long time, when Isaac had been in the land quite a while, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out through a window and he saw, and behold, Isaac was caressing his wife, Rebekah. So Abimelech looked out and saw maybe just a brief moment of intimacy between Isaac and Rebekah, and he goes, this isn't a brother and sister kind of thing. So he calls Isaac in and says, behold, certainly she's your wife. I saw what happened. I was looking through the window here. She must be your wife. Why did you say she's my sister? And Isaac said to him, because I said, lest I die on account of her. So here you see the similarity. Abraham had said the same thing about Sarah in chapter 20, because he was afraid he would be killed because of her. He had done that earlier even with Pharaoh when they had been down in Egypt in chapter 12, Abraham and Sarah. And then he did it again in chapter 20 here with the Abimelech that was king then. And now here's Isaac doing the same thing here in chapter 26 as his father had done twice. And Abraham could actually say that because Sarah was his half-sister, but Isaac and Rebekah were, you know, at the best cousins, but not brother and sister. And but Isaac had been afraid of the people there in the land. Abimelech said, what is this you've done to us? Verse 10. One of the people might easily have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us. So apparently there was some standard of morality even among the Philistines at this time, that, you know, we would have sinned had, you know, one of our people taken Rebekah as his wife. We would have sinned. You know, how could you do this to us? Boy, don't you wish our culture today would be like the culture of the Philistines then? That's the least thing anybody's worried about today. But it did at least matter to Abimelech. Oh, you could have brought guilt upon us if someone would have taken Rebekah to be their wife. So Abimelech charged all the people, saying, "Whoever touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." So Isaac and Rebekah can stop the little game here, and they can be husband and wife and not worry about it, because the king, Abimelech, has warned them, don't you touch this man, don't you touch his wife, you leave them alone. So Isaac stayed there in the land of Gerar, in the land of the Philistines. And it says that he does something a little differently than what his father did. He sowed in the land and reaped. So he was not just a shepherd, but Isaac also becomes a planter. So Isaac begins to plant, sow seed, and reap. So he's a shepherd, and he's also a farmer. And God blesses him. It says that he sows and he reaps in the same year 100-fold. The Lord blessed him. And he became rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. So you see, the blessings of Abraham are certainly on Isaac now. And he's being richly blessed here in the land of the Philistines. Because not only was he reaping 100-fold that he had sowed, but in verse 14, he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household, so much that the Philistines began to envy him. They were seeing all these blessings, and they began to get rather envious of this man that had come in to live among them. And they weren't allowed to touch him or his wife, and he was just getting blessings, and they envied him. And now all the wells which his father's servants, which Abraham's servants had dug in the days earlier, the Philistines had stopped them up and filled them up with earth. We'll get back to that in a minute. But anyway, he's being blessed richly, great harvest, great flocks, and they're feeling envy toward him. And Abimelech comes to him again and says, "You've got to leave us because you're too powerful for us. You need to leave." So he stays in the land, he just goes further out, away from the population center. He goes out into the valley of Gerar and settles there. And that's where these wells had been that his father Abraham had dug. But after Abraham had left, the Philistines had gone in and filled them all in and stopped them up. So Isaac finds these wells that his father Abraham had dug earlier, and he has his servants redig the wells and stop them. And he gives them the same names that his father had given those wells. But Isaac, whenever his servants found a well there in verse 19, the men that lived in that area, the Philistines that lived in that area, they began to quarrel and said, "No, that's our well." Well, they had stopped it up, hadn't they? They weren't interested in that well. But here, Isaac and his servants go out and do all the hard work and restore the well. And they say, "No, that's ours. That's ours." And so Jacob renames the well. His father had named the well, but he renames it Esek because they had contended with him. Esek meaning contention. And you see, they... Remember, Abraham had some disputes over his wells, too, in chapter 20. Very, very similar story here. Same thing is happening to Isaac. And so they go off and dig another well. Well, after they dig another well, the Philistines come in that lived in the area and began to quarrel over, "Oh, no, that's our well. That's our well." So they named it Sitnah, which means enmity. And so Isaac moves away and digs another well. This time they didn't quarrel over this well. Isaac had a well of his own. He digs this well and no one quarrels over it. So he names it Rehoboth. "At last the Lord has made room for us and we'll be fruitful in the land." So he gives the name Rehoboth because finally he's found a place where he can prosper. There'll be room for him and he can be fruitful. So there he has a well. Now we see here, one of the things that's said about Isaac is he's a peaceful man. You can kind of see that, can't you? There's a dispute over this well, and instead of, you know, he's a mighty man, remember. They're worried about him and ask him to go away and live somewhere else. But instead of using his might to fight for his wells, he just moves on to another well. Happens again. He just moves on to another well. He's a man of peace. Leads a peaceful existence. Then he goes up to Beersheba. We know from Abraham that he had dug a well there too. And while he was there at Beersheba, the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham." So you see here, just as God would sometimes repeat the blessings and the promise to Abraham, he does that with Isaac too. He reminds him. You know, he's moved to a different area and he comes to him again and reminds him that he's going to be blessed. This is another thing that kind of makes me think that the boys had not yet been born, because he's being told, "I will multiply your descendants." Of course, that's certainly going to happen through those sons, especially through Jacob. And he's doing this for who? For the sake of my servant Abraham. I made a promise to Abraham. God says, "I'm going to keep it. I'm going to keep it through you." And so Isaac builds an altar there and calls upon the name of the Lord, and he pitches his tent there, and his servants begin to dig a well there at this location, at Beersheba, where there had been a well. Apparently this well had been stopped up too. And that well meant well of the oath, or well of the seven. So here is Isaac in the same place where his father Abraham had been. He has this message from God, and he calls out to the name of the Lord, builds an altar there. And while he's there and his servants are digging this well, Abimelech comes to visit, the king of the Philistines, that had told him earlier, "You know, you're too powerful for us, you have to leave." Abimelech comes to him, and Abimelech is still very conscious of the blessings of God on Isaac. And so Abimelech comes to him from Gerar with his advisor Ahuzzath and Phicol, the commander of his army. Phicol had also been the name of Abimelech in chapter 20, his commander also. So here, these three men come down to Isaac because he's continuing to be wealthy and be blessed by God. And Isaac says to them, "Why did you come down to see me? I thought you hated me. You told me to leave." And they said, "Well, we can see plainly that the Lord has been with you." Verse 28. "And so we've said, let there be an oath between us. You're powerful. You know, let there be an oath between us. Let's make a covenant that you won't harm us, just as we haven't harmed you. You're being very blessed. Your household is growing. You have servants. You can come and do us harm. We hope you won't do that, because we haven't done any harm to you. Let's make a covenant." And so they said, "You're blessed of the Lord." So they made a feast, and they ate, and they drank. And then in the morning, they exchanged oaths and made this promise, Isaac and Abimelech, that they would not do harm to each other. And then they left after they made that oath. And on that same day, after the oath had been made, the servants came back that had been digging the well, and they said, "We have found water." And so they named that well, they rededicated it again as Beersheba. Beer meaning well, as we've talked about before, and Sheba meaning oath. And so, just as Abraham had named it Beersheba, for well of the oath, after he had met with Abimelech, so did Isaac. And of course, Sheba, there's can mean oath, and there's also a variation that can mean seven. And you remember there had been the seven ewe lambs that were there. It's kind of interesting that I'd read in a Bible encyclopedia that there's still seven active wells in that area. And so that well of the seven, which also could mean well of the oath for Abraham, it meant strictly well of the oath only for Isaac. That same day after Abimelech and his servants left, Isaac's servants found water, and they named it Beersheba, and that's how it's known to this day. And remember the significance of the word Beersheba, because when we talk about the boundaries of the land of Canaan, the land of Israel, We say from Dan in the north to where in the south? Beersheba. So remember, Isaac was likely heading toward where originally, and God stopped him? Toward Egypt, right. And God told him to stop and live there in the land of Gerar. And so this would be on the southern border of Israel before you go down into what would be considered lands of Egypt. So when we talk, so we'll talk about Beersheba a lot, from Dan to Beersheba, when we talk about the boundaries of the land of Israel. And that's how it's known to this day. Tells us here, we're going to go back now to the sons Esau and Jacob. It says, when Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. So Esau marries a couple of Hittite women, Judith and Beeri. And was that a good idea for Esau to marry women of the land? No. It says they brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Isaac and Rebekah just grieved over Esau's choice of wives. He married among the women of the land. And as we get on over into the next chapter, the end of the next chapter, we'll find out that these are also known as the daughters of Heth. And as if we go back to chapter 10, after the flood, we'll find out that Heth is among the descendants of Ham, Ham's son being Canaan. And remember, that was the son that was cursed of Noah. And Esau is actually marrying among the Canaanite women, among that cursed line of Ham. And this brought much grief to Isaac and Rebekah. Chapter 27, we see how quickly, how little we're going to have of Isaac's life. Here in chapter 27, he's already considering his own mortality. He says he's getting old and his eyes were too dim to see. He calls Esau, his older son. Remember, this is the son that he loved. He calls him and says, "My son," he says, "I'm old. I do not know the day of my death." "I'm getting old. I might die any day now," he says. "Please, take your hunting gear. Go out, your quiver and your bow, and go out in the field and hunt some game for me. I'd like one of those savory dishes that you can prepare. Go out and catch, prepare some venison for me. And give me something good to eat, and then I'll bless you before I die." And so he's beginning to make arrangements for passing on the family to the firstborn, Esau, the one who had been born first, and the one that he loved. Well, little do we know that Esau doesn't know. He thinks he's about to die, but we can find out later by doing the math that he's got another 43 years to live. So he's not about to die. He's not really on death's door. Well, we know who's listening in, too. I think most of us remember this story. Rebekah, his wife, was listening in, and she hears him telling Esau to go out and do these things, and so then he'll get the blessing after he does this. Well, who's her favorite? Jacob. And so after Rebekah hears this, and after Esau has left to go out to hunt for this wild game for Isaac, Rebekah says to Jacob, "Come here." Says, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau. Go get me some game, bring it back to me, prepare a savory dish like I like, and I will bless you." So listen, this is what we're going to do. Listen to me. He says, "Go out into the flock and bring me two choice kids. Bring me two small goats, and I'll prepare them as a savory dish. We can make it kind of taste gamey. It will be kind of gamey tasting, and we'll pass this off on your father as that savory dish that he loves. And you'll take it to your father, and he can eat of it, and then he'll give you the blessing." Well, this sounds easy to Rebekah, but Jacob has some doubts here. He says, "Oh, my brother Esau, he's hairy. I'm not hairy. I'm smooth." And we'll find out, too, his voice was a little different than Esau's voice, too. "My father, when I take him this dish, he'll feel me and he'll notice I'm smooth. And instead of receiving, he'll realize I'm deceiving him. Instead of receiving a blessing, I'll receive his curse. And his mother says, your curse will be on me, son. You just do what I said. Obey my voice. And so Jacob goes out and brings in two young goats and brings them to his mother. And she made the dish for him. And she made it just like the wild game dish that that Isaac loved. So then Rebekah goes into Esau's tent. Probably not his closet, but she finds some of his clothes, some of Esau's clothes, and puts them on Jacob. Then some of the skins that came off the goat, she put some of that hair on his hands and on his neck, and because Esau, he's hairy, and Isaac is blind, and so she gives him she gives Jacob the dish and says, "Here, take this in to your father." So he's dressed in Esau's clothes and has this hair on him. He's taking in this dish, and he says, "My father." And he says, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" He says, "I'm Esau, your firstborn. I've done just like you told me. Please, sit up, have some of this dish, and then bless me." And Isaac says, "How is it that you got back so quickly, my son?" He says, "Because the Lord your God, he caused it to happen. He blessed me. I was able to get it quickly because of the Lord your God." He said, "Come close to me, my son. Let me see whether or not you're Esau. The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands, they are the hands of Esau." And so he's feeling of his hands, but he can tell that the voice just doesn't sound quite like Esau. And he says, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he says, "Yes, I am." So he says, "Bring it to me and I'll eat of your game and then I'll bless you." So he brought it to him and he ate. And he gave him some wine and he drank. And then Isaac's still not convinced. He says, "Come a little closer to me, son. Let me kiss you." And so Jacob got close to his father. And he could smell Esau's garments. And he could tell that this was a man of the field. I've been around people before that probably like Esau. They're men of the field. You can smell it on their clothes. And so, yeah, you do smell like Esau. And so he was convinced and that it was the Esau because it was the smell of the field that he noticed on his clothing. And so God will give Jacob the blessing, Isaac will give Jacob the blessing at this time. And we'll pick up there Wednesday night.